The Reflection BGRT capability requires 510K clearance. This feature is not available for sale.
Welcome to the next episode in our series on metastatic cancer. My name is Sean Shravani. I'm a radiation oncologist, and I lead clinical and medical affairs for Reflection Medical. One of the really exciting things in my day-to-day job is I'm a clinician, but I get to interact with engineers, scientists, and software designers and see how they think about the diseases that I'm interested in, especially metastatic cancer. So I'm really pleased today to be joined by Samuel Mazin. He's a founder and chief technology officer for Reflection Medical. And as I said, he comes at thinking about metastatic cancer from the standpoint of an engineer and an innovator rather than as a clinician. I'm excited to learn what he thinks, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. Sam, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Sean. It's great to be chatting with you about this and really excited to delve more into this discussion.
And I'm really glad you're here. We want to just keep this an informal conversation between the two of us. Maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about yourself and Reflection Medical, how that came about.
Sure. So I'm Sam, and I'm one of the founders and chief technology officer of Reflection. As Sean said, I'm an engineer and medical imaging scientist, and I was a postdoc way back when, over a decade ago, and was sparked literally with an idea based on my knowledge in PET imaging. And that idea was based on, well, in PET, a cancer cell can emit a photon. And in radiation therapy, you're literally sending photons back to the patient to treat cancer. Why can't you just link those two concepts and have the cancer itself guide its own treatment? Of course, I had no idea if this would even be useful. I'm an engineer, and I just thought, hey, this is a neat idea. But so excited that we now have, you know, a real physician leading our clinical medical affairs team, and that's you, Sean, with ideas about how to use this. And so I'm excited to understand a bit more with you about the potential applications.
So Sam, I'm curious about something you said. You know, you thought it was a great idea, but you weren't thinking about a specific application of this technology. So I'm sure you were thinking about cancer in general, but was the idea of metastatic cancer even on your radar when this idea first came about?
Not at all. It was just the idea of can we target cancer better within the context of radiation therapy, because my own nascent knowledge of radiation therapy at the time was it was limited by the ability to see what it's treating. And here was a modality, PET imaging, that really highlighted well where the cancer was in the body. And so the idea was really targeted more to, can we improve the treatment of an individual tumor as opposed to treating metastatic disease, which was something that came about later on. So yeah, metastatic disease was not in our crosshairs at the very beginning.
So about what year was that? What would you call the very beginning?
That was, the idea was around 2007, 2008.
And so when did metastatic cancer, that is cancer that spread to different parts of the body, when did that kind of arrive on the scene in your thinking?
You know, it arrived in a couple of ways from different directions. It was not from myself or Akshay, you know, the other founder of the company, but it was from, I'd say there were two times when it kind of struck us. One was one of our scientific advisors, Jim Welsh, who's a radiation oncologist himself. He was one of the early folks that pointed us in that direction of a potential use in metastatic disease. But the other was when we were out begging for money for this company. The first institutional investor that showed interest in us was not an imaging company, and it was not a radiation therapy company, but it was a pharmaceutical company. And it was the interest of Pfizer from the very beginning about the prospect of using this technology to treat a class of patient that normally only drugs treat. You know, that's what really started to turn our heads towards, hey, maybe there's another even more significant application here.
And so about what time frame was this?
And that was probably 2012, when that interest started to really take shape.
So that's really interesting. You know, there was about a 5-year lag from what I'm hearing between the technology idea and tying it to a specific you know, potentially practice changing clinical application.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was a hammer and the nail showed up later.
When you started reading more about metastatic cancer, you know, in 2012, 2013, I mean, were you struck by the scale of the problem? Did you know how much of an unmet need that particular clinical condition was?
I think we had a good idea about how big an unmet need it was. It was more like this was seemed to be more of a niche application in terms of, well, we didn't know whether it would work, whether the concept of using radiation in the metastatic setting would bear any fruit. And so it was not the focus or the immediate value proposition we would put forth to investors or prospective customers, at least back then.
And you know, for a listener, Sam, maybe you could just take a moment and describe exactly how BGRT addresses metastatic cancer in a different way, in a new way, in an exciting way.
Yeah, so BGRT, or biology-guided radiotherapy, is what we call our ability to use cancer itself to guide its own treatment through a modality called PET imaging. And if some folks may not be familiar with PET imaging itself, it involves the administration of what's called a radiotracer, which is a type of drug that's labeled with a radioactive substance that you inject in the body, and that goes to different areas of cancer. And what a PET scan is really the image of where that cancer is in the body, because the cancer selectively uptakes that specific type of drug. Now, what BGRT is really the combination for the first time of that PET modality with radiotherapy, you know, one of the most effective ways of non-invasively treating cancer in the body. But radiotherapy, at least up until today, has been limited by the ability to treat more than one site of disease in the body. And that's because it's a very complex workflow to make sure you're directing this high energy X-rays at a tumor safely and not hitting other organs or healthy tissue. And so that limitation of being able to see where you're shooting is one of the main reasons that workflow remains complex. And so it's very difficult to treat more than one, even one or two tumors in the body. But with BGRT, because now the problem is turned upside down in the sense that the tumors are now originating that signal, you now have a way to target and track and compensate for motion and uncertainty through one injection in the body, multiple tumors in the patient. And so the promise of delivering BGRT is what we're working on right now with the technology. But that is how it enables that treatment of a new class of patient, the one with metastatic disease, where radiotherapy has not really been an important modality in the past.
That's really great, Sam. And you know, it kind of brings me to my arrival on the scene, which was sort of another 5 years, right? So you come up with the technology in 2007, 2008, you tie it to a potential important global application of metastatic cancer in 2012, and you spend the next, you know, 5 years sort of further developing the technology itself. There's a lot of inventing and engineering going on. And then I'll just share with you that around late 2017, 2018, I was also speaking with Jim Welch at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. I was having lunch with him and I was sharing my frustration really with these same set of patients, these metastatic cancer patients. And the question that I posed to him is, you know, why is it that we treat stage 3 cancer and metastatic stage 4 cancer so differently? Because they have a lot in common. So let's start with stage 3 cancer. Here you have a big tumor in the body. And we know that if you take a blood sample from that patient and look under the microscope, you'll see little cancer cells floating around in the bloodstream too. We can cure a lot of these stage 3 patients by operating and removing that big tumor or radiating that big tumor, and then giving them a drug to clear out the little cells that are floating around. So it's a combination of what we call debulking the big tumor and mopping up the little cancer cells with drug therapy. Suddenly, if you have 2 tumors or 3 tumors or 4 tumors, we completely get rid of the debulking part of that equation and only deliver drugs. And to me, this has always seemed, you know, counterintuitive. Why wouldn't we use the same strategy? And so I was talking to Jim Welsh about this, and he kind of, you know, told me, well, we need better technology. And guess what? I'm involved with this company that has, I think, invented the key to unlock this problem. And so that's where I reached out to you. I think it was with email, introduced myself and told you I wanted to get involved.
And I'm so glad Jim made that introduction. I mean, we were looking for someone who would really lead our clinical program and specifically lead the evidence generation that we needed and we still need to really demonstrate BGRT's hopefully potential big impact in metastatic disease. And I remember meeting you, Sean, way back when, and the thoughts that and ideas you already had, it was pretty clear immediately that we were very, very lucky to even have gotten your interest, let alone convince you to join our effort. You know, you're someone who has a commanding knowledge of not just radiation oncology, which is your specific field, but we quickly realized a commanding knowledge of oncology in general. I understood that, Sean, you know, you relayed a story to me before that, you know, radiation wasn't your first choice in medicine. You were initially going in a different direction. Maybe you can quickly elaborate on how you got into the radiotherapy field to begin with.
Sure. So I was always planning to be a medical oncologist. And the way you become a medical oncologist, that is the specialist who prescribes drugs for cancer, is first you do something called an internal medicine residency. And that's where you learn all the basics of, you know, using drugs to treat patients, drugs for cardiovascular disease, cancer, infectious disease. It's sort of a general education of clinical practice. And so I started my internal medicine residency, and I was at Stanford at the time. And it was my second year, and that's where you start applying for what's called your fellowship. That's where you delve into a specific subspecialty like medical oncology or cardiology or pulmonary. And so at that point, I realized I had never really encountered radiation oncology before, but that was going to be an important part of treating cancer patients. So I wanted to learn more. So I elected to spend 2 weeks at the Stanford Radiation Oncology Department just to see what it is they do. And I, you know, it was sort of love at first sight. You know, this was a group of individuals who brought to bear really incredible technology, these massive machines that sometimes look like space shuttles. They use really sophisticated computer programs. And I, you know, considered myself somewhat of a techie. I had a physics background from undergrad. And basically, I just thought, why have I never seen this specialty? It's perfect for me. And so after those 2 weeks, I walked up to my, you know, counselor in internal medicine, and I gave him the news that I don't want to be a medical oncologist anymore. I want to be a radiation oncologist. Unfortunately, that required doing a second residency, basically starting my postgraduate training all over again. But it was actually fortuitous because I got to do that training at MD Anderson. That's where I met Jim. And if I hadn't met Jim, I wouldn't have met you. And I just want to echo what you said about, you know, great partnership, because, you know, as a clinician, for me to come to where not, you know, new innovative radiation technologies are made is a bit like stepping into Willy Wonka's chocolate factory for me and interacting with all the scientists, engineers, learning from them and having the opportunity to teach them the clinical side of things has been the privilege of my life.
I mean, it was also fortuitous because, you know, you clearly have a unique perspective in that you've delved into multiple aspects of oncology. So Sean, taking a little bit of a step back, can you talk about what the main treatments for cancer are?
Sure, Sam. Well, so that's such a great question. And, you know, I always like to put things in historical context. And if you'll take a trip with me 20 years ago when I started my medical career, you know, for cancer, we really only had 3 or 4 arrows in the quiver. We had surgery, so we could cut out tumors. We had radiation, which is basically a stream of high energy particles that we aim at a tumor. And they're like bullets. When they crash into the tumor, they cause it to get injured and die. And we had chemotherapy, which is basically a blunt kind of drug that can kill cancer cells, but it's not particularly specific for cancer cells. So it causes damage to all the other organs and tissues that it flows through as well. And then that was about it. You know, sometimes we would use hormonal therapy, but our options were pretty limited. And I would say the mood in oncology 20 years ago was a little bit pessimistic, to be honest. We hadn't seen major advances, and we didn't know if it was going to get any better for our patients, particularly those with advanced or metastatic cancer. What's really changed, though, is that in the last decade, we've sort of seen this wellspring of innovation in drugs and technologies, and we're really moving the needle for cancer. I'll list off a few of those innovations. There's immunotherapy, where we make a patient's own immune system better able to attack cancer. There's cellular therapy, where we train cells and inject them into the patient's body to seek and destroy cancer cells wherever there may be. There are targeted drugs that attack specific molecular changes that are only on the cancer cell. There's even injectable radiation. And of course, in surgery and radiotherapy, we've had incredible invention to make those things more precise, more targeted, more able to spare normal tissues that happen to be around the tumors that we're cutting out or shooting with radiation. So the number of options or arrows in the quiver, like I said, has really multiplied rapidly. And it's just a really exciting time to be in cancer. You know, these things happen in medicine. You know, in medical school, I was taught about how we used to treat disease with leeches, how infectious disease changed radically overnight before the invention of penicillin and afterwards. So it's just really a thrill to be living through one of those sea changes and keeping up with it, you know, on a month-by-month basis with all the discoveries that are coming out in the clinical trials that are reading out.
And I know you're going to talk about some of these in later points in this your podcast series, but just quickly on immunotherapy, I mean, to me, that's one that has completely changed everything, because not only is it a new type of therapy, but it really is a paradigm shift in how we think about cancer itself. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so what immunotherapy is, Sam, is, as I said, you know, it's a drug that doesn't act on the cancer itself, but actually acts on the immune system to make it more aggressive and to make it more able to see the cancer. You see, you know, cancer is a pretty devilish foe. And one of the things that it does is it tricks the body into thinking it's supposed to be there. Because usually the body, whenever it encounters a foreign anything, attacks it and gets rid of it. And so cancer, like I said, is able to overcome this by putting blinders on the immune system. And these drugs actually take off the blinders. And I promise I'm going to answer your question. The reason this makes us rethink what cancer even is that in the past, we had a very sort of standard definition of cancer. You have an abnormal cell in your body that's just starting to grow and divide abnormally and rapidly, and it crowds out normal cells and eventually spreads everywhere in your body. And so this uncontrolled growth was the core definition of cancer. What immunotherapy is teaching us is maybe uncontrolled growth isn't the core definition of cancer. Maybe it has more to do with an abnormality in the immune system's ability to see cancer. That's the most essential feature.
Yeah, that is fascinating. It does. I mean, it's fascinating. And, you know, from what I started to learn as I understood more about radiation therapy itself, you know, radiation therapy has been based on this principle of, well, here's radiation and it can attack cancer by basically disrupting DNA and cell replication and things like that. And that's how it was thought to kill tumors. And then I go to a conference a couple of years ago and I learned something completely different. Can you highlight how this immunotherapy paradigm has even changed our thinking of radiation?
Yeah, that's really also fascinating. And if you don't mind, I'll tell you about an interesting experiment done in mice to kind of get to this answer. But first, let's start with, you know, the old way of thinking, like you said. You know, the idea was you shoot these particles at a tumor. They're like little bullets. They hit the DNA of that tumor and cause it to shatter. And without its DNA, cancer dies. And for literally decades, generations, that was the understanding of how radiation killed cancer. But then we started learning more about the immune system and that interaction with radiation and made us challenge some of that thinking. So here's the experiment. You take mice with tumors and you treat them with radiation and their tumors go away. Okay, fair enough. You take mice, first you get rid of their immune system using different means at your disposal, and then you treat their cancers with radiation, and their tumors don't go away. Okay, now that's a very crude representation of the experiment, but it's a really curious result. Because if all radiation is doing is shattering the cancer cell's DNA, then it shouldn't matter whether the mice have an immune system or not. Either way, the tumor should just go away. But it turns out that radiation doesn't kill the tumor as well if the immune system isn't in the picture. So that means the immune system and radiation have to work together somehow to cause that cancer cell killing.
Yeah, and that is just mind-boggling and really upending about 100 years of knowledge in radiation biology.
Yeah, and I have to say, as these results came out, we saw, you know, our whole paradigm, our whole understanding change. And this happens in medicine, right? We used to treat diseases with leeches. We used to think that, we couldn't cure infectious disease until penicillin was discovered using drugs. So, you know, we have these landscape changes in medicine not infrequently. And what's really interesting is all of us today are actually getting to live through one of those, changes in how we understand a very common disease. And so it really is a thrill to keep up with the literature and the discoveries as they come out in real time.
So I know that you're actively designing clinical studies, you and your team, to investigate, you know, BGRT's potential in metastatic disease. Now, I wanted to ask you, when you think about metastatic lung cancer or metastatic breast cancer or metastatic prostate cancer, you know, how are these related or the same in your mind? Or also, how are they different?
Yeah, that's a really good question, too. So, you know, again, just going back 100 years of history, we've always been taught to separate cancers by their origin. And so we've kind of created a category called breast cancer for tumors that start in the breast. We create a category called lung cancer for tumors that start in the lung, and so on and so forth. But as we've gotten better at probing the genetic nature of the cancer cells, we've come to realize that it makes more sense to think of cancers not in terms of their origin necessarily, but more about their biological character at the molecular and cellular level. So we're dividing cancers and categorizing them more that way now. And we use different treatments for different biological categories, even if they happen to come from the same tissue of origin. So that's how they're different. But having said that, you know, going back to your question, how are they the same? I think there are still some essential similarities between all types of cancers, even at the cellular and molecular level, that we can take advantage of to apply, you know, platform solutions without being tied to any particular cancer subtype. Does that make sense, Sam?
Yeah, it does. And so in some respects, those differences, even within the same histology, as you mentioned, can garner different treatments, but that might suggest also the reverse, which is even across different histologies, there may be similarities where the same treatment might apply.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there's one clinical trial design called a basket study, or an umbrella study is another kind of clinical trial design, where we actually collect different kinds of biological subtypes and different even cancers of origin together and test an intervention in that basket or in that umbrella, because we don't think that intervention should be necessarily tied to a very specific narrow category.
Yeah, it's super exciting. So Sean, we talked about BGRT technically, at least what and how it may be applied in metastatic disease, but can you talk about your vision for BGRT and what you hope to achieve in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the reason that I joined Reflection in the first place. In that lunch conversation, what captured my imagination was this idea that the reason we don't locally remove or ablate multiple tumors in metastatic cancer patients today, a lot of the problem has to do more with technology than it has to do with our desire to do it. I mean, if we could do it, we would want to do clinical trials and investigate it. And here's why I think it's exciting. Imagine that you have, you know, 4, 5, or 6 tumor spots in the patient's body, and you radiate all 6 of them because BGRT gives you an efficient, logistically easy way to do it. Well, that patient has a lot less cancer in his body now. And so when the standard of care drug therapy comes along, it has less enemies to deal with. And I think outcomes are going to be improved just for that simple mathematical reason. But I think there's more, even at a molecular and cellular level and in an immunological level too. You know, one of the reasons that cancer eventually becomes resistant to drugs like chemotherapy or even immunotherapy is that cancers are always mutating and evolving and coming up with new traits, including drug resistance traits. So again, imagine that you bring radiation on into the process and you kill a bunch of these cancer cells before they have a chance to evolve. You might short circuit that drug resistance problem. And then finally, let's talk about immunology a little bit more. Every time you kill a cancer cell, you do 2 things. You inflame that tumor. It becomes leakier and more susceptible to immune cells coming in and doing their thing. You're also spilling the cancer cell's contents into the body, and these proteins, these contents, can be sniffed out by the immune system, and they become like bloodhounds. They learn to recognize that scent and hunt it everywhere throughout the body. And if you actually tie that process to a immune-enhancing drug, there could be really exciting synergies. And so as we bring BGRT into the clinic, we're going to do a lot of clinical trials that test these hypotheses and see if we can really change the outcomes and expectations for metastatic cancer patients by combining BGRT with all of the new drugs that I talked about earlier.
So Sean, every time, you know, we interact, it's amazing. I mean, I keep learning something new every time, and these are extremely thrilling discussions for myself. I just want to thank you for taking the time to host this podcast series. I know you're a very busy person. So this has been really enjoyable and informative for me and hopefully the listeners.
And thank you, Sam, as well for joining us today. This has been a really illuminating discussion. Like I said, as a clinician, I love the opportunity to talk to people whose perspectives are a little bit different and complementary to my own. So thank you so much. And we'll see you all next time in the next episode of our podcast. Thank you.